It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station, broadcasting from Kodiak, Alaska, where we have a few clouds. It's 48 degrees. 30% chance of showers after 4 p.m., they're saying. But otherwise, partly sunny skies, the high near 51. Southwest winds, gusty, up to 25 today. And as high as 30 tonight. Coming up on the Midday Report, the University of Alaska Fairbanks has begun in earnest its project centered around the Into the Wild bus. Less coronavirus testing is in store for Anchorage's citizens. And Alaskan pediatricians are worried about the upcoming winter season. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. President Joe Biden is countering former President Donald Trump's bid to invoke executive privilege to keep several allies from having to comply with congressional subpoenas for information. Today, the White House announced it is authorizing the National Archives to share some documents with the House Select Committee that's investigating the pro-Trump attack on the U.S. Capitol in January. In a letter to the National Archives, a White House counsel said the documents bear on the committee's need to understand the facts underlying the most serious attack on the federal government's operations since the Civil War. As NPR's Barbara Sprunt reports, the financial health of Trump's Washington, D.C. hotel is also under heavier congressional scrutiny.
The House Oversight and Reform Committee obtained documents from the General Services Administration, which discovered that although Trump reported his D.C. hotel brought in $150 million while he was president, the hotel actually incurred upwards of $70 million in losses. It also found that Trump concealed hundreds of millions of dollars of debt from the GSA when bidding on the lease for the hotel building. The committee also found that Trump received undisclosed preferential treatment from a foreign bank on $170 million loan to his hotel that Trump personally guaranteed. The House Oversight Committee is calling for further investigation in light of these findings. Barbara Sprunt, NPR News.
The U.S. is coming off another slower month in job growth, underscoring how the Delta variant of the coronavirus is still disrupting the economic recovery. The Labor Department reports employers added just 194,000 jobs in September, far fewer than what was projected. But President Biden urged Americans who might be worried about the state of their economy to look at the big picture.
The monthly totals bounce around, but if you take a look at the trend, it's solid. On average, 600,000 new jobs created every month since I took office. And in 3 months before I got there, that was one-tenth what was being created.
The unemployment rate dropped sharply to 4.8%. The head of the U.S. Treasury is applauding a historic agreement for the world's economies. NPR's David Gurr reports that more than 130 countries have reached an accord that could reshape how companies are taxed.
For years, many countries have competed with each other by lowering tax rates to make them more attractive to companies. That's led to what Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen has called a race to the bottom. Today's deal could change that. It would set a global minimum tax rate of 15%, and it's projected to lead to $150 billion in new tax revenues every year. Yellen has pushed hard for the deal, and it's expected to be finalized at a G20 summit in Rome later this month. But it's not a sure thing. All the countries have to approve the deal, and there's no guarantee it will get through Congress. David Gura, NPR News, New York.
This is NPR.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
Kodiak's election results have yet to be finalized. Both the borough and city governments will do their canvassing of the election on October 13th. As KMXT's Dylan Simard reports, there are some apparent winners and some races that are still too close to call. While most races were clear, the race for the second city council seat between incumbent Terry Haynes and Tracy Craig is not. Haynes, who is an employee of KMXT, remains ahead by only 14 votes. In the Kodiak Island Borough Assembly, one race appears clear. Challenger Scott Smiley has a 46-vote lead over incumbent James Turner and a 385-vote lead over incumbent Dennis Simmons.
I don't know, I'm just a sweet guy, I guess.
That's Scott Smiley. He says he remembers coming to Kodiak in 1974, the summer President Richard Nixon resigned. Smiley was a graduate student doing biology research. He eventually left to lecture at University of Alaska Fairbanks. He returned to Kodiak as director for the Kodiak Seafood and Marine Science Center, then known as the Fishery Industrial Technology Center. He retired in 2012 after working there for 11 years. Smiley applied to fill an empty seat on the Borough Assembly in 2016 and was appointed by the Assembly. Later in the year, the position came up for election, which Smiley won. In 2019, he decided not to run again for health reasons. Now that he's apparently headed back on the Assembly, he says he wants to get the departments back to full strength. According to the clerk's office, there are 8 vacant borough positions on the roster. He also complained that the state government is offloading costs to local governments.
And the reason for that is essentially a failure for the state of Alaska to deal with the diminishment of oil revenue. We're getting hammered by the state, and new fiscal responsibilities are being shoveled onto the municipalities. And unlike the federal government and the state government, we can't just wing it. We have to balance the books. And then there's been a strong anti-tax move, well, really since Ronald Reagan. And we've been doing that for 50 years or so, and there's no money. We can't hire people. We can't do anything.
Incumbent Borough Assembly member James Turner was also reelected with 737 votes. He's been on the Borough Assembly since 2019. In Kodiak, I'm Dylan Simard.
The University of Alaska Fairbanks has moved the Into the Wild bus to a UAF engineering building lab for repairs. Originally dragged into the wilderness for a road construction camp along the Stampede Trail, the 1940s Fairbanks public transit bus is where young adventurer Christopher McCandless lived and starved to death in 1992, a story popularized by the book and movie Into the Wild. The state helicoptered the bus out of the wilderness in June 2020 to stop people from making dangerous hikes out to see it. Under an agreement with the state, the UAF Museum of the North plans to create an exhibit around the vehicle. But up until this week, it remained in storage. Museum Senior Collections Manager for Ethnology and History, Angela Lynn, who is leading the bus project, says the UAF Engineering Building's High Bay Lab is an ideal facility to begin preparing the bus for display.
Dry, it's warm, it's safe there. It's kind of the best possible solution on the campus for doing this next phase.
Lynn says the bus project, which involves materials science as well as structural engineering, will provide a learning opportunity for students.
Understanding the structural elements of objects and how they degrade over time and what can we do to slow that degradation process down. And so it's a great educational opportunity.
Lynn notes that the project also includes design and potential fabrication of an outdoor cover and observation ramp for the bus at a yet-to-be-finalized campus location. She says the first project is to thoroughly photograph and 3D scan the bus for both documentation purposes and potential development of a virtual tour.
Maybe an augmented reality component to the virtual exhibit where you could place yourself in the bus back out on the Stampede Trail.
Lynn says a team of about 25 people are helping guide the broader bus project, emphasizing that the future exhibit will be about the bus's entire history, not just the Christopher McCandless story. As far as readying the actual bus for eventual permanent outdoor exhibition, Lynn says the plan is to stabilize its condition and make it safe.
There's big holes in the ceiling and in the floor from when they helicoptered it out. So clearly we need to deal with that. So mitigation of that. We need to close up the windows because most of them are broken out. So we're going to have to replace all that glass and stabilize the stuff that's there. There are a lot of rust holes. So we've got to, deal with that.
Lynn says a cost estimate for the project is still being developed.
It's going to be a big number, though, for sure.
Lynn says the museum plans to raise money for the bus repairs and exhibit development through a mix of sponsorships, also crowdfunding and grants. But in the meantime, the public can view the bus inside the UAF engineering building through large windows overlooking the High Bay Lab. The company that runs Anchorage's municipal coronavirus testing sites is scaling back its hours this week. That's even as the city continues to see some of the nation's highest rates of COVID-19 transmission. Visit Healthcare, the city's testing contractor, is reducing its hours starting Friday. Schedules posted by the company show that three of its testing sites will be open two or three fewer hours a day. The change comes as Visit Healthcare's COVID-19 testing contract is set to run out at the end of the month. The multi-million dollar contract began last year. Officials from Mayor Dave Bronson's administration have said city-sponsored testing and vaccination will continue, but add that they're considering whether to change elements of their programs. Anchorage's testing policy, posted recently to a city-sponsored website, has already changed. It once encouraged residents without symptoms to get tested, and now says city testing sites should only be used by people with symptoms of COVID-19 and close contacts of infected people. In a prepared statement, Anchorage Health Director Joe Gorace says the department is reducing hours to make sure that the budget for Visit Healthcare's current contract lasts through the end of the month.
So if we don't adjust hours, we run out of money before an appropriation could occur.
One assembly member, Meg Zalatel, says the decision is problematic as she and her colleagues have been pushing for expanded testing.
Because lines were spanning parking lots and taking hours to get a test. We've got to have COVID testing right now more than ever, and to reduce that service doesn't make any sense to me.
Mayor Bronson, a conservative elected earlier this year, has questioned scientists and doctors' coronavirus guidance, and he's blamed vaccine mandates, not the virus, for the stress on the city's health care system. That's even though data released by Alaska hospitals show that very few workers so far have been fired for refusing the shots. Bronson has declined to get the COVID-19 vaccine himself. He also vigorously opposes mask mandates and restrictions on businesses, and at a recent public appearance, he endorsed unproven coronavirus treatments like ivermectin. Alaska's hospitals are seeing an intense surge of COVID-19 patients that's stressing doctors and their staff. So far, they haven't been stretched by coronavirus cases in children and babies, but some of Alaska's pediatricians are worried that could change as we head into the winter season of respiratory viruses. Nat Herz with Alaska Public Media has this report.
Last year, as Alaskans braced for a COVID-19 surge that could stress the state's medical system, things were oddly quiet at the unit at the Anchorage Native Hospital where Dr. Matt Hirschfeld works. That's because he works in pediatrics with kids.
Flu and stuff kind of disappeared out of the state with all the mask mandates. And, you know, our pediatric intensive care unit doctors were offering their services to the adult ICU.
Flu and another respiratory virus called RSV can fill up Alaska's pediatric ICUs during normal times. And now that kids are back at school and Alaskans are taking fewer precautions, doctors are worried that cases could rebound sharply. Then there's the added layer of COVID. While it doesn't hit kids as hard, it can still send them to the hospital, and it can also pull staff away from pediatrics to care for sick adults. And that uncertainty is causing substantial anxiety among the state's pediatricians. Hirschfeld says only two hospitals in Anchorage and one in Fairbanks have much in the way of capacity for kids.
Bethel does a little bit and Alaska Regional does a little bit. But we, you know, like everything else, we just don't have a lot of capacity to take on a huge surge if that happens.
Alaska's small network of hospital pediatricians has already gotten pretty creative at managing that limited capacity. Sometimes they take the unusual step of actually medevacing kids from Anchorage to lower levels of care to make room at the hospitals with ICUs. During one particularly bad surge of respiratory virus on the North Slope, stressed Anchorage hospitals sent specialists to the region to train caregivers on treatments so that fewer kids would have to be transferred to Anchorage. Dr. Michelle Nace is a Fairbanks pediatrician who also works with the state health department.
There's a level of always wanting to take care of the kids, always trying to find a way, how do we meet this kid's needs, but know that there might need to be a little shuffling and figuring out where can we meet that kid's needs the best.
The coronavirus adds an extra layer of uncertainty to that already fragile system. Not only are some of the pediatric workers being reassigned to adult COVID patients, there's also not a lot of room for transfers to hospitals outside Alaska, which can normally be a relief valve. Here's Nace again.
COVID is a big unknown, and you've seen it in the lower 48, that some of those hospitals and those pediatric ICUs have been overwhelmed and had to find other places for those kids to go.
Doctors say they think they'll be able to handle a surge in sick kids if it comes, but Nace says they're also not totally sure what to expect.
What concerns us with this upcoming season is we already have so many COVID, and we even haven't hit the peak or the entrance to our flu and RSV season. So it's like a storm, and we just don't know how bad it is because we don't know how to predict it, just like the weather.
The difference between this situation and the weather, though, is that Alaskans can actually help determine what happens.
It's just stone cold simple.
Dr. Rob Loverich cares for kids in Anchorage ICUs.
If it's possible to divorce yourself from politics for a moment and listen to the message, it is simply this. Kids get vaccines all the time.
Anyone older than 6 months can get the flu shot, which can help keep kids out of the hospital. And the more family members already eligible for the coronavirus vaccine get those shots, the less likely those viruses will infect children or infants who can't get the vaccine quite yet. Federal regulators are also likely to approve the COVID vaccine for children 5 to 11 in a matter of weeks. Overall, Loverich says the shots are essential.
To have a self-inflicted respiratory catastrophe, I mean, when we've had months and months and months to prepare and see it coming, it would just be unimaginable. The solution is right there. It's hanging right in front of us.
Kids are already starting to show up to hospitals with respiratory viruses, Loverich says, but most cases tend to arrive starting around January, so it will likely be months before pediatricians know how bad things will get. In Anchorage, I'm Nat Herz.
Last night, the U.S. Senate averted a national credit default with a vote to extend the debt limit until December or January. Senator Lisa Murkowski was among 11 Republicans who joined Democrats to advance the bill past a filibuster, but the final vote was 50-47, with only Democrats voting yes. Murkowski's vote on the procedural cloture motion may hurt her with some right-wing conservatives. Former President Trump, for instance, has been advocating for a harder line. But Murkowski hasn't stuck her neck out very far. The Senate's top Republican, Mitch McConnell, also voted to advance the bill. And it's the short-term fix he devised to avoid a default next week. At least 10 Republicans had to vote for it. The bill raises the debt cap by $480 billion. A federal anti-discrimination agency has reached a $50,000 settlement with the company Costco Hires to give out free samples in its stores. The watchdog sued because the company refused to accommodate a Juno employee's request for extra bathroom breaks that she needed for a medical condition. As Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports, the company's treatment of its Alaska workforce will be monitored over the next 2 years.
The Equal Employment Opportunity Commission went to court more than 2 years ago based on a complaint from a woman that had been hired to work inside Juno's Costco in 2016. About a year after she was hired, Terry Baker had been told she could not use the bathroom except during her regular shift's two breaks. That's despite producing evidence she had a medical condition that could require a trip to the bathroom more often than twice over a 6.5-hour period, says EEOC attorney Amos Blackman.
You know, we saw here an employee who really suffered unnecessarily, and also just a larger issue of a type of policy, this refusal to accommodate additional bathroom breaks, that had the likelihood of impacting any number of workers.
The 2019 lawsuit didn't directly involve Costco. The retail chain doesn't hire the people that offer the product samples in its aisles. They are employees of Club Demonstration Services, a subsidiary of a larger firm with global reach, which has tens of thousands of people on its payroll.
Club Demonstration Services has an older workforce than many companies. It employs many employees with physical disabilities and older workers, and that is great, right? But that doesn't give any employer the right to say, well, because we hired you in the first place and we can easily replace you, we're not going to accommodate you.
A settlement approved by a federal judge Tuesday puts the company under what's called a consent decree. Regional managers will have to be trained on the company's legal obligations under federal anti-discrimination laws that require reasonable accommodation for employees with underlying medical conditions. That includes the Americans with Disabilities Act. The consent decree also requires regular reporting to the EEOC, which will be monitoring the company's treatment of its Alaska workforce over the next 2 years.
And if there are complaints, they get handled in a more rigorous manner, and that then the EEOC will get reporting on all of those complaints for the next 2 years so we can see if they're holding up their end of the bargain.
The lawsuit asked for Baker to get her job back. Instead, the company agreed to pay her $50,000 in back wages and other compensation. Baker, who still lives and works in Juneau, declined to comment. The contractor's attorneys in Anchorage did not respond to requests for comment, nor did Costco, which has contracted with a sample dispensing firm for decades. In court filings, the contractor didn't dispute many of the allegations in the lawsuit, but it did deny that Baker was fired, saying she resigned instead. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
In a recent release, the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center has reported 22 new cases of COVID-19 for the Kodiak Island Borough. There are currently 189 cases classified as active locally. There are 2 active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. And that brings the total case count to 2,318.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. How does a lack of sleep affect fishermen? A new study aims to find out. More after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Finding time to sleep can be one of the biggest challenges during a busy fishing trip, especially during limited openers. The pressure to bait and pull pots or lines and handle nets can be unrelenting.
The less you sleep, the more money you make in some sense. And that's a really hard thing to overcome because everybody wants to make more money.
Jerry Dugan is director of the Alaska Marine Safety Education Association based in Sitka.
I don't think I've had one person tell me it's not a problem.
Dugan told KDLL in Kenai that studies show sleep deprivation leads to more accidents and worsens physical performance.
There is a lot of data, both qualitative and quantitative data on sleep deprivation. I mean, the military alone has done volumes and volumes on this because of performance of personnel in the military, but not much has been done in the commercial fishing industry, and I think that's the big thing.
AMSI has partnered with national organizations for a 2-year first-ever project with 200 randomly selected fishermen in Alaska, Oregon, and the Northeast. The goal is to better understand their concerns about sleep patterns and the possible effects of sleep deprivation on their health and safety. Funding for the project comes from the U.S. Coast Guard and the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health. NIOSH spokesperson Julie Sorensen told National Fishermen that interviewed fishermen have said they wonder how negative effects of sleep deprivation will impact their cognitive ability as they get older. And many said they're curious about energy drinks, naps, their diet, and other areas that affect their sleep and overall health. Researchers also are following fishermen's sleep patterns through a tracking app and will do health exams this summer and fall. Find links to the project at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 8th day of October, the year 2021. The sun rose today at 8:30 It will set again at 7:22. That will give us 10 hours and 53 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds. The record low for this date was 23, set in 1924, and the record high was 60 degrees, set in 1970. We're closer to the record high right now at 48 degrees, a few clouds, pretty pleasant but gusty winds. We're looking for southwest winds gusting to 25 today and as high as 30 tonight. 30% chance of showers for today and tonight, mainly between 4 and 8 p.m. For tomorrow, a slight chance of showers before 11 a.m., then a slight chance of rain after 11 a.m. Mostly cloudy skies tomorrow with a high of 50. West wind to 35, gusting as high as 45. Speaking of those winds, we have a gale warning through Saturday for Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore. Southwest winds to 35 knots right now and seas to 16 feet. For tonight, southwest 40, seas coming up to 20 feet. And for tomorrow, west 40, seas to 20 feet. And the Shelikof, gale warning through Saturday. Southwest 20, early, increasing to 35 knots. Seas building to 11 feet today in the Shelikof. For tonight, southwest 40, seas building to 14 feet. And for tomorrow in the Shelikof, west 40, seas to 11 feet. Registration is open for the Kodiak Hockey League youth ice hockey season. Open to girls and boys ages 5 to 18, the season begins soon. New players are welcome and can begin through the KHL Learn to Play program. Visit KodiakHockeyLeague.org for details. That's all one word, KodiakHockeyLeague.org. Do you have a kiddo between the ages of 5 and 18 who enjoys hands-on projects? Kodiak 4-H may be a good fit for them. This year, Kodiak 4-H is offering in-person and virtual programs, as well as 4-H at-home project kits. Enrollment has already started and starts at only $26 for the whole year. For more information, email Kodiak4H, that's with a number 4, Kodiak4H at gmail.com, or you can call them at 486-1503. Also, look at their Facebook page, Kodiak4H Facebook page. And don't forget, Run the Rock is virtual this weekend. You pick the distance you want to run and the date and time. You can run any time between Saturday, October 9th through 11 p.m. on Monday, October 11th. Register at kmxt.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.